Bear Down Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Courtney Cronin back at it again, continuing to break down an interesting loss as we get ready to look ahead. But you got to look back first and see what the heck is going on, especially with the play calling here in Chicago. Courtney put out a very interesting article, and I think it brings to the forefront some really good questions that we got to discuss on today's episode. Also, you can't help but peek at what the other rookies are doing. And when you see the performance from Jaden Daniels last night, Courtney, you got to feel a little bit of like, all right, Caleb didn't do that bad, but like that was a good performance.
For sure. I mean, three games in, we're not making any declarations. At least I'm not. Like, we were talking about the Sun Around the Horn that today, and the question was, is he a superstar already? I'm like, guys, it's three games in. Was that an impressive performance that we saw last night? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to do it and make the Bengals defense look, I mean, everybody respects Lou Anarumo, like, as a defensive coordinator. Now, I think that you probably have some questions about just like how badly they got beat up, but Jaden Daniels did that to an experienced defense. Not great. Not a great look whatsoever for Cincinnati, but for Washington, you're feeling really confident that this is the reason why we didn't make calls or like accept calls for the number two overall pick. This is the reason we are confident in taking the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. All in all, there's a lot to like about both quarterbacks right now. It's just that one team is 2-1 and one is 1-2. And, you know, one looks considerably like it's in a worse spot right now offensively than the other.
Yeah, and I think that's a great place to start with this, right? Because there's a lot of Bears fans out here who I have seen, and I saw it as the game was going on, just, why is Jaden Daniels looking so much better than Caleb Williams? And I almost want to stop you in your tracks there, because I don't know if I can co-sign the he looks so much better. I do think that he's getting an offense that is tailored to his skill set, that he's calling, that he's played a phenomenal game, like you said, versus a Bengals defense that you can't sit there and just turn your nose up at. Sure. But I don't know if I'd say that they're, you know, top three in the NFL, top five in the NFL, but still a rookie dealing with that situation. But when I left that game, I could see clear-cut differences in where I feel Caleb Williams is as a quarterback and where I feel Jaden Daniels is as a quarterback. And what I commend the Commanders on is they have made it as easy as possible for Jaden Daniels to walk in there. You look at some of those sets, the deep ball to Terry McLaurin that he gets out there. I mean, that's basically a college throw. There's no motion. There's nothing crazy there. Straight line speed. Terry beat your man. Jaden able to throw a deep ball, drop it over the top. You're right there, touchdown, right? Like, those are the things that I think they've made it easier for Jaden with. And then at the end of the day, they're not stifling his athleticism like we've seen here in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, the 15 runs from Jaden Daniels that have resulted in a first down, it speaks exactly to that. And that's the most that we've seen from any quarterback through three games. He is an active part of this run game. But they also have running backs elsewhere, like Brian Robinson last week against the Giants, 130-plus yards on the ground. That helps your young quarterback. And we saw a pretty balanced rushing attack with the quarterback involved last night and about three to four other running backs that Washington felt that they could lean on.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen here just yet, because this is, for a number of different reasons. And we've heard some of the excuses that the Bears are leaning on as to why they do not think the run game is getting going. But what does it all start with? The offensive line. And Washington had a major question mark going into the season about what this unit was going to look like. Would they be able to protect Jaden Daniels? I mean, I know that all summer when I was on First Take and Get Up and all these shows, that's all we talked about. Like, the situation that Caleb was walking into, everybody seemingly like forgetting about the offensive line there, but for some reason they wanted to talk about Washington's, like, it was just this atrocity. And they made a lot of different moves. They signed a new center. They used a third round draft pick. I believe it was on their, on their right tackle. Their left tackle and Brandon Coleman. And they've made moves, moving personnel around, and they're scheming away from like the weaknesses of this unit. They're getting run support. They're getting their running backs helping in protection too. Bears don't have that right now with their offensive line and with the run game to be able to help Caleb Williams. So to me, that was one of the first things I noticed upon watching this game last night, of how effectively they were allowing Jaden Daniels to operate, because it wasn't all on him. He wasn't throwing 52 times because they had no run game. He was able to have a much more, I guess like the word would be measured stat line is 21 to 23. Like, yeah. And they,
it's not measured, they, Courtney. That's slinging that pill.
Yeah, I mean, God, the way that he threw that ball to Terry McLaurin for the not go ahead or the game clinching touchdown, more or less, but the fourth down throws, the third down plays where they're saying, "Hey, Jaden, responsibility is on you here in these situations. We trust you. We have the confidence in you. Go make a play." But they also have better support around him, not in terms necessarily of the skill player. Nobody's doubting what the Bears have at receiver. But when the offensive line is helping him out as much as they are, that's the reason when he's under pressure, he's nearly perfect. And from a clean pocket, his throws so far we've seen look better than from where Caleb Williams is right now.
No, 100%. The one thing that I will say, though, that you notice in that game that is very different, that in my mind, Caleb has operated well at and has kind of picked up on. Now his offensive line is not giving him any grace when he's out there, though. But is you really didn't see Jaden making a lot of checks. You didn't see Jaden changing a lot of plays. You didn't see Jaden walking up to the line and calling out who's the mic, who's the Will, right? You didn't see him doing a ton of the pre-snap stuff. Again, they're making it as easy as possible for him. But when I see Caleb Williams already doing that in week three, a week where he did have his best offensive output, while yes, there were still some struggles, I feel confident about that because it tells me that he's already at a point where I can understand what I'm seeing defensively. Maybe I'm a little too aggressive in some moments than I shouldn't be, and that's what leads to some of these interceptions. But I can see what the defense is trying to set up for me. And I just think that he's there. He's to a point now where it feels like he just has to kind of get the happy feet out of there. He has to figure out, okay, how the heck do I survive behind this offensive line, which is going to be his toughest thing all season. But he's not confused at what he's seeing on the other side. It doesn't seem like the Bears are dumbing it down for him.
No, and they said from the very beginning they weren't going to hold anything back from him. Now, is that the right approach? We talked about this with Matt Eberflus yesterday, and the right before that fourth down play at the goal line, it did sound, he didn't say like definitively, but it did sound like Caleb Williams had the option to call a timeout there. Now, we know that should have come from the sideline when they're seeing the look there and when they have people in the booth talking to people on the headset down on the field. They should have done that. Now, is that that's on coaching? I wouldn't put that more on the quarterback, but there are certain things where I appreciate them understanding Caleb's football intelligence and not trying to take away from him or not trying to limit him in moments, but you got to help your quarterback out. On the flip side of that, with what we saw from Jaden Daniels, that before that fourth down throw, the 9-yarder that he had to Zach Ertz that then like kept that drive going so they were able to score that 27-yard touchdown, it looked like he was telling Dan Quinn, no, we want to go for it. We want to go for it. I want to go for it. And the confidence that they have in their rookie quarterback is evident from the very beginning. Now, not every rookie quarterback is going to have that. I would imagine if the Bears were operating the same way, they would feel the same way as Washington does about Caleb Williams that they do about Jaden Daniels. It's just that the offense has been so stagnant in being able to string together what is a very explosive passing attack in Washington. They're second in EPA per play through the first 3 weeks of the season. Bears are 28th. Like, there's a big difference that I think. Can it boil down to play calling and play calling alone? No, of course not. We know that there's so much more that goes into that, personnel being a big part of that, but you just don't have the same sort of questions around this offense. And I know Cam Taylor-Britt wants to call it a college offense, so be it. It worked. It worked against your defense. And it made Washington look really good. Their receivers were getting 4.1 yards of separation per target. Yeah. That's insane. If the Bears could do that, can Caleb Williams make those throws? I'm sure he can, but can he have some more clean pockets to make them thrum? And like you said, like calm down his feet a little bit. That probably goes hand in hand to having a more productive offense than what the Bears have currently.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, to me, it comes down to there's one problem that the Bears have. And if you left that game and feel like it's Caleb Williams, you don't have eyeballs. Like, I'm sorry. Like,
did Caleb Williams feel like that?
You said what?
Did some people actually feel like that? Oh, who are those people?
Of course.
Are those the Justin Fields people?
I don't even know.
Are those people? The people were saying, oh, they shouldn't have traded Justin after 3 weeks. Delusional.
I'm not going to lie to you, Courtney. I think it's extended. I mean, you get back-to-back weeks of multiple interceptions. There are some people that just feel that it should come down to the quarterback no matter what. Those people in general have been the Caleb Williams people that were like, get Justin Fields out of here. And now all of a sudden Caleb Williams isn't fixing the offensive line problems like everyone expected him to. That's crazy to see. But what I will say is I didn't leave that Colts game going, Caleb Williams is the problem. Caleb Williams isn't able to move the ball down the field. He's not able to process what he's seeing. And I think that there's a the Jaden Daniels to Caleb Williams conversation will always be there because they're one and two. But it is more of an apples to oranges conversation to me because I don't think that they're similar quarterbacks in the sense of where they're at right now. I think the fact that, and when you watch the All-22, the fact that Caleb Williams was able to throw 363 yards, yes, do I like that he dropped back 52 times? I don't. But I also have to say, well, the Colts are putting eight in the box almost every time, basically daring you to throw the ball. You being able to be successful at that is impressive from a rookie quarterback standpoint. 213 yards in the first half. I don't take the yards away from the DJ Moore pass because if he makes it an inch, it's three touchdowns, two interceptions. And yeah, I mean, so I don't take the yards away. And then you see in the second half, now he knows what's coming and he gets even better, especially in that fourth quarter where he throws two touchdowns and he was 14 for 1,822 yards with a 131 passer rating. I feel like the development of Caleb is still happening, even in what, based on yesterday, I got to say, is a worse situation offensive line-wise than what Washington had. And I didn't know if we felt we were going to be in this position coming into the season.
Well, Jaden Daniels is still developing, too. Yeah. I think that what we have to – like. People want to overreact to this because they see one person doing really well and one person not. And this is all stemming from the fact that we had CJ Stroud throw all of our expectations for rookie quarterbacks out the window last year. And that dynamic between number one, Bryce Young, and number two, CJ Stroud, and just how one was up here and one was way the hell down here at the end of the season. I think that some Bears fans are afraid of history repeating itself. Now, I think there's some recency bias in there, and the simple fact is, like, CJ Stroud's the anomaly, not the norm.
Yeah.
However, there's so much of this that brings into account the play calling aspect and what Cliff Kingsbury is doing right now in being able to scheme Jaden Daniels, like scheme him in a way where he's taking the load off of his shoulders. That's not happening the same way in Chicago. You don't have the questions of personnel usage issues and the head coach saying we want to get targets to our best skill and, you know, shouting out when that actually happens. Like, that doesn't happen in Washington. That hasn't been happening. That's happening in Chicago because there's some strange usage for, you know, why Roschon Johnson wasn't on the field for the goal line series. Like, there's too much being sorted out from like the administrative standpoint of getting your offense on the field and getting it in a place where it feels like it can produce points and yards.
Yeah.
There's way more of that here than there is in Washington. And, you know, just going to say it, the Bears had a chance. If they really wanted to hire Cliff Kingsbury, they could have. They had him in the building. They had him here to pick his brain about Caleb Williams. Instead, they let him go. He ends up signing a contract to be the offensive coordinator in Washington. I'm sure he provided some really great stuff and intel on Caleb Williams, but you could have paired him back up with the guy who was, he wasn't his OC at USC. He was like the
offensive assistant.
He was in the booth. He was in the booth. He wasn't in that like coaching. I'm in the quarterback's ear, you know, even though they didn't wear headsets last year. It wasn't that, but you could have had him if you really felt Cliff Kingsbury, who I think gets a ton of unfair flack. Like, look how good Kyler Murray's rookie season was, despite the fact that the team was 5-10-1 or whatever the heck it was.
Oh yeah.
Like, there's a lot to like about the way that he has helped quarterbacks who are of this ilk reach their potential, especially in their rookie seasons. Now, you know, they have to live with it. If Shane Waldron, if we look at this at the end of the season and Jaden Daniels goes and wins offensive rookie of the year and Caleb's numbers are, you know, mediocre, then you're probably pointing at the offensive coordinator first and foremost and saying, well, that was a mistake. I mean, it's still early, but I think there are a lot of things that you don't like about what you're seeing them ask Caleb to do offensively and really asking him not to do based on the deficiencies of the personnel elsewhere and what they're not accomplishing to help him.
And I think that's what's tough about this to me, right? When I look at Cliff Kingsbury, of course, Clint Kubiak's name has been brought up a ton with what he's been able to do or what he was able to do week two. Yeah, week three looked very different.
Back down to earth.
I don't know if people saw those Lucas Patrick PFF numbers, by the way, but they're human again. I don't know if you guys noticed that or not. But The thing for me is I'm looking at all the situations that those coaches are coaching in versus here. And even with Shane Waldron, now listen, I think his short yardage plays, I think they're asinine. I think running speed option on the goal line is grade school at best.
That's a college play.
Even in college, I don't know if I've seen speed option on the goal line, Courtney. That was very special. I don't know if Liberty's running speed option on the goal line, but at the end of the day, I also look at all the plays and I'm going through and I'm looking at the amount of plays that Caleb has to throw on. And I'm watching Braxton Jones basically get pushed back like he's a Michael Jackson moonwalker. I'm watching Coleman Shelton just get flipped over anytime he engages with somebody. I'm watching Tevin Jenkins trip over his own 2 feet. I don't know if people thought that Matt Pryor was going to be a fix. He's not, ladies and gentlemen. He's just large. He takes up a little space over there. Like, you're in a position right now where if you're Shane Waldron, one, you can't run the things that you want to run because of the offensive protection. And two, you're getting killed for having Caleb drop back 52 times, which I do think is a lot. But you're also basically going, I have to take what this defense is giving me. The Colts were selling out all day. It's not just Shane going, I want to drop back and do this 52 times. I think that there is some, we want to run the football, but when you have an inability on the offensive line, I have a tough time just putting all the blame on Shane Waldron. I do blame him for the goal line stand. That is a problem because those were points that could have put you not with your back up against the wall at the end of that game.
Well, and the simple fact is, I know that they're going to keep saying it's not a talent issue that they have. Well, of course it is. Talent. Of course it is. Absolutely, it's a talent issue. Like, take a look. And I know that so much attention has gone onto the four plays that they ran inside the Colts 4 yard line, and rightfully so, because that's a microcosm of their problems that they have through the first three games. But, you know, I think so much of it's hand in hand, but I think more of it, honestly, at this point is on the play caller. Given just some of the matchups that he has drawn. I mean, you think about that third and one, like the personnel issues are why you have DeAndre Carter like head up with Tyquan Lewis. Can we not like, I mean, that's so atrocious that of course they're going to blow that up. Of course it's going to look terrible, but you know, that's not to say that on the fourth down when they don't set the edge on the left side and it's Braxton Jones and Tevin Jenkins on their backs looking up the field at the play where DeAndre Swift is trying to make something out of nothing on that 12-yard loss. This is what you did. Like this is the offensive line you're fielding because you chose to not really make any significant upgrades.
Right.
What Washington did, and I wanted to bring this back up because I think that I want to make sure I'm getting all of the pieces correct here of like how the wall that they're trying to build in front of Jaden Daniels. So like what they did, they knew like with that, you know, one of their draft picks they were going to use to go get somebody to protect the blind side of the quarterback. So they got Tyler Badiash, who was the center in Dallas. They sign him. They sign Nick Allegretti, who was with the Chiefs last year. He's now playing on the left side. He's a guard. They cut Charles Leno, who had been a longtime staple in Washington. They end up saying, okay, this is not working. We're going to move on. I mean, Bears fans obviously know the same thing there. They have Brandon Coleman with a third-round pick at left tackle. They've invested here in a way that I think the Bears are going to have to eventually if they want to be able to protect Caleb Williams. Now, that's kind of a hard pill to swallow when I say that on September 24th and you realize that there's months left of the season. And if these issues don't get fixed until the offseason, how does Caleb play? How is his health? How does he, is he starting to see ghosts out there? You don't want to break your quarterback in the process. But I think so much of this has been a miscalculation on certain positions, namely that offensive line, and maybe even I do think that with the running game, it will get worked out eventually. There's personnel usage questions that I have over that, like most people do. But if this is as good as it's going to get with your offensive line, then it's going to be a rough season. But there's no way around that unless you can start seeing, people moving around, which I think is going to have to happen when they get guys coming off IR, whether it's Larry Borum, whether it's Ryan Bates. Like they've got to figure out a better combination than this because this is not sustainable.
This is where I really want to see, and this week is going to be very telling with the Rams coming up. okay, Ryan Poles, are you, or I'm sorry, okay, Matt Eberflus, are you the defensive coordinator of this team or are you the head coach? But there's, because there's no way that you watched the impact that Roschon Johnson had while he was out there,
yeah,
and the impact that DeAndre Swift had while he was out there and said, yeah, both of these guys are giving equal impact. Roschon, for, to his credit, and I get it, it's versus a much worse run defense, but like, he was still getting hits in the backfield and he was able to push the pocket. He was able to be an extra blocker out there. He was more useful out there as a runner in the run game than what you saw from anybody else on limited attempts. And four, almost 4 yards per carry is impressive behind this, this offensive line with how these guys are getting hit so quickly. I also think that, you know, if you're not taking more of a hands-on approach in the personnel, and we heard Flus talking, you mentioned it in your article about how he's, you know, how he met with Shane Waldron, sure, at 6:30 in the morning to go over the plays. I mean, like, are we heading towards a Flus? And this is the big question I have going into next week, that is taking more of the hands-on approach with everything on this team and not just the defense, because we saw with Luke Getsy, he was very hands-off and the offense just didn't work.
Yeah. And I think like there have been some hints, some messages like thrown out in through the media, the way that Flus is using it, like to express how he feels about a certain situation or maybe a certain player. We've seen it throughout training camp. We saw it even like, you know, when he's complimenting Roschon Johnson. Like, to me, that's a shot at Shane Waldron as to why was Roschon Johnson not on the field at all on that goal line series? Why had he just converted a 4th-and-1 for you at the 5, yet you're not using him down there, yeah, after you used him on third downs, two previous third downs, both of which, you know, he ran the ball, one of which he converted for a first down. Like, it just doesn't make sense. So I think some of that is Flus positioning how he feels, how he wants the offense and what he wants it to look like. It's, you know, for Shane Waldron, he's got to take all of that into account and start putting players in the best situations, whether, you know, based on down and distances. Like DeAndre Swift, I don't think that option play would have worked on anybody. Let's just call it what it is. That's a stupid play. It should have been thrown out. I mean, you heard Tiki Barber say on the broadcast that, like, oh, he immediately is like, I hate the play call, because you, once Caleb gets pressured, he's out of the play. It's not an option play anymore. Like, yeah, taken away. So like, you had no choice but to flip the ball to DeAndre Swift, who hasn't shown you anything. So why is the guy who's not shown you anything getting on the field in these critical, gotta have it situations, and you're relying on him based on what to go and produce? Like, instead of riding the hot hand, who at that point, yeah, I think he had like 6 carries for 18 yards in the first half. He's doing better than anybody else that was out there. Yeah. So why is that not being taken into consideration in these critical situations where you could have had a tie ball game going into halftime? Some of that's not justifiable. So to answer your question, whether Matt Eberflus has to start helping out more with the offense or at least giving his input, I think you'll start to see if things change and things shift a little bit, where the influence is coming from. It's still too early to tell because we've seen a 3-game sample size of this. But now that they have legitimate problems that they can identify on enough of a sample size, if they don't fix that, then that's the fault of all the coaches. Like, that to me is a coaching malpractice. If they can't go through that and say, okay, well, this hasn't worked, let's try it this way. Because you can't expect to like have, you know, you can't expect to have it look like this and that yield wins. Like, this is the point of your schedule where you need to be racking up as many wins as you can. It's, you know, Washington comes, or they go to Washington in a couple of weeks. They've got the Patriots coming here in a couple of weeks. The Rams are, I understand they came back from a 14-point deficit, but they're still banged up. You've got Carolina, who has a new quarterback, but still, they're Carolina. Like, there's just all of these opportunities, and a crappy Jacksonville team at that, that you play in London, a Jacksonville team that had like 3 points for the entire first half, more or less. It's so bad. You have to win these games. You're giving away the gift that was given to you weeks 1 through 10 with a manageable schedule if you don't come away from this slate with at least 5 wins.
Was last night the night where the rest of the world realized what I've been realizing for 2 years, that Trevor Lawrence is not that good of a quarterback?
I'm just so tired of the fact that he gets such a long leash. And I get it. Most quarterbacks who are drafted number 1 overall do.
Long contract.
They pick up the 5th-year option and then they give him $275 million. And Doug Peterson has the audacity to say, yeah, I don't know, right? You know, all changes are on the table, more or less. Are you kidding me? That's cap. You're going to like bench your $275 million quarterback for Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. Call me when that happens. I'll see. I have a better likelihood of becoming president this cycle than that happens. But it's just, it's so embarrassing how we do this though. And you know, I hope, you know, you hope as a Bears fan that Caleb doesn't fall into that same sort of trap. We label these guys generational talent based on what we saw in college. And they get to the NFL, you can give him a pass for his first year because that Urban Meyer team that was 3-14 was god awful.
Yep.
But he's had a 50 something, he's a 53, 54 game sample size. We know who you are after three years and three games into the season. We know who you are, but like we keep trying to hold out hope this guy is not Daniel Jones when his numbers are telling us he's Daniel Jones.
Oh, his numbers are absolutely telling you he's Daniel Jones. And listen, it was, I don't know, maybe it's because we're here in Chicago. We're so quick to flip the switch here in Chicago. We expect you to do something continuously if you're really good at it. But I mean, let's be real. He had a Ryan Fitzpatrick run at the end of what, 2022, mm-hmm. and made the playoffs.
And they won that game because of the other team's deficiencies.
Yeah, came back in a playoff game that he threw four interceptions in to put them down 28-3. Like, I don't know. I'm just glad the rest of the world has made it to where I've been for two seasons. It is what it is. But here's the one thing I will say about getting back to the Bears here and about Matt Eberflus. You know, the question on him is, nobody's questioning, is he a good DC? You could see it. The defense is humming. These guys are a phenomenal defense. Dare I say he has put together a Super Bowl caliber defense if he can keep everything on track and get a little bit of offense out of these guys. But this coming week and the following weeks, right, I really wonder how much say-so he has, because we know how the politics of football can play into things. We know the fact that Ryan Poles doesn't want the fact that he spent $8 million on a guy not being utilized, even though he is literally the worst, running back, in the NFL. And that is not even an exaggeration. He's three games in. He's making $11,000 per yard he's rushed. Like, that is not a good sentiment for you to keep going, yeah, this guy's the answer. We're going to start him. You should be heading into week four with Roschon as your best option, because Roschon looked like your best option, and you are searching everywhere for answers. As far as the offensive line, I don't think you can fix that this season, but there are small things that you can fix that can make that easier for Caleb Williams. And I think anything that makes Caleb Williams' life easier, right, Matt Eberflus should be in favor of, and these decisions should be quick decisions.
Yeah, they should. And the hard thing is with DeAndre Swift, it's like, all right, well, have you exhausted all options with him? Have you used him enough as a pass catching back that maybe that could be his best option, like to keep him on the field and justify what you're paying? And, you know, if the answer to that is no, then you keep trying to figure out ways to get him involved, and maybe they're trying to up the screen usage for him, getting him out on more pass plays, and then using Roschon Johnson on third downs. Like, they threw a lot on third down in the first half, which was just a little curious because it felt like this was a manageable game where you should have been, you know, you should have been giving the, you know, the Colts a look. Test the run defense. That's just, I think, just the straight up numbers. You should, like, this is a team that gave up 500 yards, nearly 500 yards in their first two games on the ground. And Caleb's passing numbers versus the running attempts were just so out of whack. Yes, I know they were down by two scores at the end of the game. They, in the most of the second half, they had to pass the ball to stay involved or stay, you know, in striking distance. I get that. But to me, that's just a game plan issue from the very jump. And if it's a personnel issue, then you got to not necessarily cut your losses, but you have to kind of like swallow your pride and say, Roschon's giving us the best chance. If it's Khalil Herbert, he's giving us the best chance. And I don't think that that was the case this past week, but DeAndre Swift averaged 1.5 yards per carry. They didn't pay him $8 million a year to do that. Like, this is, even he was apologizing to the defense, Pat, after the game. He's saying, like, I just want to apologize on behalf of, you know, himself and everything else of how crappy this has gone for them. There's no excuse. And if his you know, if they saw something to where, I mean, I know he had a Pro Bowl season sandwiched in between his best, you know, last year and then his best season in Detroit a couple of years ago. If they just miscalculated it and said, okay, well, maybe there's, you know, they can look at it and say, okay, he's not the running back he once was. It's hard to admit that, but like, if you keep forcing it through and it's not working, that's going to cost your team games that they need to win if you're not deploying the right personnel in the run game to be able to take the heat off the quarterback. I don't think anybody's going to tell you that 52 passing attempts from Caleb Williams is sustainable. Now, does that mean that this can't be a pass-first offense? No, it doesn't mean that. But you have to get into a rhythm first before you can get there, because it becomes the most predictable game when you can expect that he's going to be dropping back all the time to throw the ball. I think that Caleb can handle a heavy load better than some other quarterbacks can, but he doesn't have any run support right now to lean on, so he doesn't have to be doing that on what feels like every other play.
No, 100%. We got to figure it out. Got to get this run game figured out. I think play calling wise, in the short yardage moments, it flipped the switch over there to the offensive side. And in that fourth down, again, moments to be a head coach, right? In that red zone situation.
Hey, call timeout. Somebody had to call a timeout. I think so much of an indictment on, and you even heard Flus double down yesterday when they're talking about the 2-point conversion attempt that they had to call a timeout for. He said, no, like, we have to be better there. It's on coaches. Well, what's going on in the booth that's not being relayed down to the field, or vice versa? Like, also, here's how it works. Like, they will usually tell a quarterback the situation right before he goes on the field.
Yeah.
And just to make, because you get so locked in as coaches. I know that everybody playing armchair quarterback, everybody watching the game said, you know, they're down by 5. Like, of course you have to go for 2. How would they not know that? But like, sometimes when you're so in the thick of it, you only have like, you know, a certain amount of time to get in and out of the huddle and get in and out of, you know, out of a touchdown, your unit back onto the field, your 2-point unit. Like, I get it. Like, it's not having enough communication is never an excuse, but sometimes it happens. How it felt like nobody else was aware in that situation is how I felt with what happened on that first half, where, you know, we see Caleb tells everybody that, you know, he didn't feel he had enough time to change the call. Well, then why is a timeout not coming from the sideline when somebody sees, oh, we didn't set the left edge, you're about to blow through this and turn Braxton Jones into a turnstile. And oh, wait, we don't like this look. I know that they want to say that they had practiced that play a bunch, and that's fine, but it was not the right look to run that with, considering they were overloading to the left side of the offensive line, and they had a clear numbers personnel advantage. Numbers advantage. It was just, that's on coaching. That's on your coaches to identify that immediately and say something.
Yeah, 100%. So many things in this game were, I mean, like the timeout calls in general. Flus gets lucky at the end, but let's be real. The decision to not go onside kick.
I was wondering about that. Like, I know that you have to declare it. I get it. Like, I know it kind of sucks now. Nobody wants to onside kick because there's no surprise. The element's gone.
Yeah.
But it was so weird to me where it's like, after they score, wait, you're not going to try for this? Which I don't know if we ever really got a clear answer on it either.
Which is fine if you got a kicker who can boot it out of the end zone, right? Because then 2:01, you get the extra timeout. You call your timeout. You got to stop there on third down. You're in a great position. They got to punt it. You're getting the ball back. Yes, the clock.
Especially with the way their defense had been playing too.
So I can almost understand it from that point. The problem is I watched Cairo Santos miss a 53-yard field goal. He ain't got the leg. We already knew he didn't have the leg.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, his career long, what was it, a 56-yard field goal?
His career long, was it 56? I thought it was 53 that he missed.
I've got it. Let me see. I think it was C. Santos. It was a 56-yard field goal. That was the one he missed in the first quarter, and his career long was 54.
Right. You know this guy doesn't have the leg to just boot it through the uprights. He's not that guy. You're taking a chance there. It just so happened that they brain farted, and the guy was like, yeah, fair catch. We're out of here. It's like, wait a minute. You're going to give them the timeout. You basically could have lost the game if he just runs it out to 159 and they hit the 2-minute warning straight out of the timeout. Like, there's a lot of coaching questions out there that have to be addressed, especially heading into this next week. But to me, there's so many that are just, all right, Matt Eberflus, show me you're a head coach now.
Yeah, and I've gotten this question, like, should Eberflus be feeling his seats hot? No, not right now. They're three games in. They are 1-2. There are a lot of teams right now that are 1-2.
A lot of teams 0-3 that didn't think they'd be 0-3.
But let's be real about this. Like, if this continues on and we're at the halfway point of the season and it's looking like this is a team that's going to, you know, finish either like under the win total from last year, or like that things just right don't feel like they're clicking for Caleb Williams, then I think it's a fair question at that point about, do you have the right head coach in for a rookie quarterback? He still has a lot of time to prove it. Shane Waldron still has a lot of time to prove that he's the right OC in that situation. Right now, it's not looking good 3 weeks in, but that's a sample size that we're looking at that might change over the first 10 games of the season. But Eberflus has an opportunity these next couple games to take control of the issues that he has pointed out are hurting this team right now, whether it's miscommunication from the coaching staff, which, to be fair, we didn't see that happen in game one. Saw it happen on the stupidity of challenges, which are on him at the end of the day for throwing the flag. But we know that he can say whatever he wants about his process. It wasn't a good one. It isn't a good one for those things.
Do you give him some grace? Do you give him some grace on the second one because Kyler Gordon said that the ref told him basically if we called it an interception, you would have gotten an interception.
I guess you do like a little bit, but I still even think that was such an emotional decision because his cornerback's throwing a tantrum on the sideline, being like, no, I really caught it. Whereas the first one was completely inexcusable when it happened.
The first one was nuts.
But I don't even want to talk about the challenges. I want to talk about what that led to. Then you're still having issues with communication between the coaches week three. That's a big problem. And this is a chance to kind of right the ship. You're going home. You're in an environment that is more controlled than being on the road. So hopefully those issues aren't a thing. But you have an opportunity against a team that's super injured too. Like, they've got to start manipulating these teams' weaknesses.
Yeah.
And the weakness right now is that Matthew Stafford, for as good as he is, the 14-point comeback, I get that. This secondary doesn't have to account for Cooper Kupp, does not have to account for Puka Nacua. That should be advantage Bears 10 out of 10 times. You got to get these wins that are just stacked up for the taking right now. And if they don't, then it's going to feel like a lost season.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's a lot of I think I said it last week, Tuesday on the pod. I really believed that the Bears could be 4-1 by the time they were going to play Jacksonville. I thought we were going to lose. Listen, we could still be 4-2. I thought we were going to lose Jacksonville. I didn't expect Jacksonville to look that bad. Like, they don't look like a football team out there.
Yeah, they've got a lot of problems. I would say they probably have more problems than the Bears do, which is a good situation for Chicago to be in, knowing that, you know, they still don't know what they have in Caleb Williams. They probably won't know by the time they go to Jacksonville. But they can at least know, hey, this is the way that we should be scheming things for a rookie quarterback to not put him in a crappy situation.
Yeah, you got to have that down. And I think you talk about communication issues, you know, just to finish out here, like the communication issues with Caleb and his receivers. We're now 3 weeks into this thing and we've got miscommunications left and right. At a certain point, you do have to wonder, okay, is it the coaches? We had Lance on Monday. He said, when you get that many miscommunications, you get the DJ Moore miss, right? A couple more in that same game. There's probably been five throughout the entire first 3 weeks of the season. He said, when you get that many as a coach, you got to take a step back and say, I'm teaching something wrong. And again, does it go back to coaching? Maybe, but just communication issues again being the theme of the first 3 weeks of this season.
It's a big problem. And it sometimes feels like a scapegoat, but you know, whether it was cadence issues, pre-snap stuff, false starts, all of these things that showed up in the preseason and what didn't show up in the preseason. You didn't really get a feel for your running game truly in preseason games. That stuff carries over, unfortunately. In DeAndre Swift played 2 snaps in the preseason.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a reason why he might not be feeling like completely comfortable in this offense yet, or like a productive member of it? I think there is.
Yeah, that definitely could be. I brought that up a couple times. That could be something major. I think a lot of it when you watch the plays is just, you know, your center basically being thrown in the hole that you're supposed to be running through. But again, he's supposed to be an outside zone guy. We talk about personnel. He's He's supposed to be this outside zone guy, and we're running him power. I don't like it. Yeah, we're taking Roschon Johnson. We're running him outside zone for two plays of the game. I'm like, what are we doing here? Is it opposite day? Like, we know what these guys do well.
Just wish they'd stop running out of the shotgun as much as they are. Everybody around the league. It's so I don't understand the trend there. And I get it. When they get inside the 5 yard line, that's a trend that's not just Shane Waldron. By and large, across the league, that's something that has happened now for multiple weeks. I wrote that in my story when you were taking a look at like the anatomy of these issues, like kind of what you've seen from Shane Waldron. Like this is the trend in the league. Like shotgun's most common formation inside the 5 yard line since 2021. He's following league average more or less, but you've had 9 plays now inside the 5, 6 of those have been called runs. And we can, of course, like play, you know, armchair quarterback and like look at, you know, play the hindsight game all we want. Cole Kmet just converted, you know, or just barely missed a conversion on that pass play that Roschon Johnson then, you know, punches through at on 4th and 1. Like, it was so predictable. The Wildcat in that situation. With Khalil Herbert, really?
With Khalil Herbert. That's my beef. That's my beef with it. Khalil Herbert got you 3. What could Roschon have gotten you? Roschon could have got
why
you
can't you? Why can't, you put Caleb under center and run? Why can't you sneak him? Why can't other teams do the tush push? I don't get that.
I don't know. Well, I mean, listen, I don't know. The tush push, I know. You don't have the offensive line to
do it. I get that. You don't have the offensive line to execute it, but why can't they sneak Caleb Williams in other situations on 4th or 3rd and 1?
With your big body. In the goal line
situation, they could have, but you're not bringing in, you're clearly bringing in guys to block for him. Why couldn't they have tried that?
I mean, well, Courtney, it doesn't help as much when you bring in the 184-pound wide receiver, though. You know what I mean?
Maybe leave him. Maybe leave DeAndre Carter on the sideline for that.
You know what the best part of that whole play was?
Was him throwing up his hands, being like, DeAndre what Carter. The hell did you just do to me? I laughed so hard when I saw that in real time because I'm like, oh, man, he's pissed. You put me in a no-win situation. I'm going to let you know it on TV in real time.
He got picked up to tackle Khalil Herbert. Like that. Yeah, like, I'm going to be upset about that a little bit, dog. That was nuts.
He just like hip-checked me into him. It was terrible.
That was insane. Let's hope we can get some issues figured out here before we get into this Rams game. You guys let us know your thoughts in the comments below. What are your thoughts on the offensive play calling? Do you think Matt Eberflus needs to take more of a hands-on approach to this team? Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. For Courtney Cronin, it's your boy Pat the Designer back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down, one love. Maybe it gets fixed. Maybe. Probably not. Peace.